eyes and you will see that America is still the land of the free.
Welcome to the Voice of Freedom, your national beacon of liberty. Now, here's your Voice of Freedom, Brent Johnson.
Did you know that Davy Crockett served 6 years as a member of our National Congress until 1835, 1 year before he died fighting at the Alamo? While Davy was a congressman, a bill came up for a vote, a bill that proposed to use public money to pay financial benefits to the elderly widow of a highly decorated, deceased naval officer veteran of our Revolution and the War of 1812. It seemed like a worthy cause, and all of the discussion immediately preceding the vote appeared in favor of its passage. But then Davy got the floor and rose to speak. This is what he said. "Mr. Speaker, I have as much respect for the memory of the deceased and as much sympathy for the sufferings of the living, if suffering there be, as any man in this House. But we must not permit our respect for the dead or our sympathy for a part of the living to lead us into an act of injustice to the balance of the living. I will not go into an argument to prove that Congress has no power to appropriate this money as an act of charity. Every member upon this floor knows it. We have the right as individuals to give away as much of our own money as we please in charity, but as members of Congress, we have no such right to appropriate a dollar of the public money. Some eloquent appeals have been made to us upon the ground that it is a debt due the deceased. Mr. Speaker, the deceased lived long after the close of the war. He was in office to the day of his death, and I have never heard that the government was in arrears to him. Every man in this House knows it is not a debt. We cannot, without the grossest corruption, appropriate this money as the payment of a debt. We have not the semblance of authority to appropriate it as a charity. Mr. Speaker, I have said we have the right to give as much money of our own as we please. I am the poorest man on this floor. I cannot vote for this bill, but I will give 1 week's pay to the object. And if every member of Congress will do the same, it will amount to more than the bill asks. Remember now, Davy is speaking almost 50 years after the ratification of our Constitution and boldly claims that every single congressman knows that he doesn't possess the semblance of power or authority from the Constitution to appropriate the taxpayers' money for government charity, and that if they do, it would be an act of grossest corruption." When Davy sat down, no congressman replied, and when the vote was taken, the bill was soundly defeated. The next day, one of Davy's fellow congressmen challenged him to justify his heartless appearing position regarding the naval widow's bill, and Davy told the following story by way of explanation. "Several years ago, I was one evening standing on the steps of the Capitol with some other members of Congress when our attention was attracted by a great light over in Georgetown. It was evidently a large fire. We jumped into a hack and drove over as fast as we could. In spite of all that could be done, many houses were burned and many families made houseless, and besides, some of them had lost all but the clothes they had on. The weather was very cold, and when I saw so many women and children suffering, I felt that something ought to be done for them. The next morning, a bill was introduced appropriating $20,000 for their relief. We put aside all other business and rushed it through as soon as it could be done. The next summer, when it began to be time to think about the election, I concluded I would take a scout around among the boys of my district. I had no opposition there, but as the election was some time off, I did not know what might turn up. When riding one day in a part of my district in which I was more of a stranger than any other, I saw a man in a field, plowing and coming toward the road. I gauged my gait so that we should meet as he came to the fence. As he came up, I spoke to the man. He replied politely, but, as I thought, rather coldly. I began, "Well, friend, I am one of those unfortunate beings called candidates, and, yes, I know you. You are Colonel Crockett. I have seen you once before and voted for you the last time you were elected. I suppose you are out electioneering now, but you had better not waste your time or mine. I shall not vote for you again." This was a shock. I begged him to tell me what was the matter. "Well, Colonel," he began, "it is hardly worthwhile to waste time or words upon it. I do not see how it can be mended. But you gave a vote last winter which shows that either you have not capacity to understand the Constitution or that you are wanting in the honesty and firmness to be guided by it. In either case, you are not the man to represent me. But I beg your pardon for expressing it that way. I intend by it only to say that your understanding of the Constitution is very different from mine, and that I believe you to be honest. But an understanding of the Constitution different from mine I cannot overlook, because the Constitution, to be worth anything, must be held sacred and rigidly observed in all its provisions. The man who wields power and misinterprets it is the more dangerous, the more honest he is." "I admit the truth of all you say," I told him, "but there must be some mistake about it, for I do not remember I gave any vote last winter upon any constitutional question." "No, Colonel, there's no mistake. Though I live here in the backwoods and seldom go from home, I take the papers from Washington and read very carefully all the proceedings of Congress. My papers say that last winter you voted for a bill to appropriate $20,000 to some sufferers by a fire in Georgetown. Is that true?" "Certainly it is, and I thought that was the last vote which anybody in the world would have found fault with." "Well, Colonel, where do you find in the Constitution any authority to give away the public money for charity?" Here was another shock, for when I began to think about it, I could not remember a thing in the Constitution that authorized it. I found I must take another tack, so I said, "Well, my friend, I may as well own up. You have got me there. But certainly nobody will complain that a great and rich country like ours should give the insignificant sum of $20,000 to relieve its suffering women and children, particularly with a full and overflowing treasury, and I am sure if you had been there, you would have done just as I did." "It is not the amount, Colonel, that I complain of. It is the principle. In the first place, the government ought to have in the treasury no more than enough for its legitimate purposes. But that has nothing to do with the question. The power of collecting and dispersing money at pleasure is the most dangerous power that can be entrusted to man, particularly under our system of collecting revenue by a tariff, which reaches every man in the country, no matter how poor he may be. And the poorer he is, the more he pays in proportion to his means. What is worse, it presses upon him without his knowledge where the weight centers. For there is not a man in the United States who can ever guess how much he pays to the government. So you see that while you are contributing to relieve one, you are drawing it from thousands who are even worse off than he. If you had the right to give anything, The amount was simply a matter of discretion with you, and you had as much right to give $20 million as $20,000. If you have the right to give to one, you have the right to give to all. And as the Constitution neither defines charity nor stipulates the amount, you are at liberty to give to any and everything which you may believe or profess to believe is a charity, and to any amount you may think proper. You will very easily perceive what a wide door this would open for fraud and corruption and favoritism on the one hand, and for robbing the people on the other. Individual members may give as much of their own money as they please, but they have no right to touch a dollar of the public money for that purpose. If twice as many houses had been burned in this county as in Georgetown, neither you nor any member of Congress would have thought of appropriating a dollar for our relief. There are about 240 members of Congress. If they had shown their sympathy for the sufferers by contributing each 1 week's pay, it would have made over $13,000. The congressmen chose to keep their own money, which, if reports be true, some of them spend not very creditably. And the people about Washington, no doubt, applauding you for relieving them from the necessity of giving by giving what was not yours to give. The people have delegated to Congress, by the Constitution, the power to do certain things. To do these, it is authorized to collect and pay monies, and for nothing else. Everything beyond this is usurpation and a violation of the Constitution. So you see, Colonel, you have violated the Constitution in what I consider a vital point. It is a precedent fraught with danger to the country, for when Congress once begins to stretch its power beyond the limits of the Constitution, there is no limit to it, and no security for the people. I have no doubt you acted honestly, but that does not make it any better, except as far as you are personally concerned, and you see that I cannot vote for you. When the farmer finished his lecture, Davy Crockett humbly admitted that he had been wrong in this matter, and that his vote to appropriate public money for the victims of the Georgetown disaster had been unconstitutional. But this farmer was not satisfied with Davy's apologies, and not satisfied with Davy's solemn oath not to vote for another unconstitutional law. The farmer continued, "You have sworn to that once before," obviously referring to the oath of office each congressman must still take today, "to uphold and defend the Constitution from all enemies, domestic and foreign. But I will trust you again upon one condition. You say that you are convinced that your vote was wrong. Your acknowledgement of it will do more good than beating you for it, if, as you go around the district, you will tell people about this vote and that you are satisfied it was wrong. I will not only vote for you, but will do what I can to keep down opposition, and perhaps I may exert some little influence in that way." It is interesting that the farmer would agree to trust Davy just one more time, even though Davy admitted to violating his original oath of office to uphold and defend our Constitution. The quality of mercy is not strained. To err is human. To forgive is divine. Davy agreed to publicize his mistake as widely as possible, and kept his promise to the farmer to do just that. Because he did, the farmer gave Davy his full support for re-election, and the two men became close friends. Right before the election, Davy visited his former critic, and later reported, "Though I was considerably fatigued when I reached his house, and under ordinary circumstances should have gone early to bed, I kept him up until midnight, talking about the principles and affairs of government, and got more real, true knowledge of them than I had got all my life before. I have known and seen much of him since, for I respect him. No, that is not the word. I reverence and love him more than any living man, and I go to see him 2 or 3 times every year. And I will tell you, sir, if every one who professes to be a Christian lived and acted and enjoyed it as he does, the religion of Christ would take the world by storm. Now, sir, you know why I made that speech yesterday. Davy Crockett was a congressman who had the courage of his convictions in the principles of freedom, patriotism, and Americanism. He was not afraid to admit his socialistic mistake, and because he loved the country which our founders gave us, he would never again vote for socialism, no matter how worthy a cause appeared, or how emotional was its appeal. Davy realized that he was not elected by the people of Tennessee to give away their tax dollars for so-called welfare or government charity. His farmer friend made Davy realize the American principle that he could donate his own money in true charity, but that the public's money was not his to take, to give away to others.
Thank you for listening to this edition of The Voice of Freedom. Opinions expressed are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the views of Truth and Freedom Radio Networks, Freedom Broadcast Group Incorporated, or our sponsors. For more information about your freedoms and liberties, or to contact Brent, just log on to our website at www.freedomradio.us or call 1-888-385-3733. Join us next time for another lesson in liberty on The Voice of Freedom.
America, land of the free, right to life and liberty. Open your eyes and you will see that America is still the land of the free.